Wondering if you should stay in Illinois or move out of state? Get your copy of Scott Tucker's book, Escape Illinois, Should I Stay or Should I Go? Get your complimentary copy at retirementdakota.com.
Investment advisory services are made available through AE Wealth Management, LLC, a registered investment advisor.
Terry Savage joins us now. I'm a little confused, Terry, because the U.S. has been downgraded and all the other news has been pretty good lately. I was a little surprised to hear that.
That's so funny. I was going to start by saying, you want the good news or the bad news? I'd like to start with the good news first.
Okay, let's do that.
Okay. The good news is, and the report just came out late yesterday, that for the first 7 months of the year, this is through July 31st, the S&P 500 had a year-to-date gain of 20.65%, the largest year-to-date gain through July since 1997. So I was going to start out by saying, oh, well, guess what? Well, we were all worried about when's the recession coming and will it happen because the banks have these commercial loans on it? Will it happen because student loan repayments start? Consumers get tapped out. The fact is the market chugged along and was a broad-based gain, not just the tech sector, of course. And volatility dropped. So there was a lot of good news about the stock market while we were busy worrying about the economy. And then you nailed this, John. Right in the middle of all this, hey, guess what? Sort of a bull market up 20%. Yesterday, out of left field, out of the blue, out of nowhere, came Fitch Ratings downgrading the U.S. credit status from AAA to AA+. That's been done before. S&P did it on its ratings for the U.S. government debt back in 2011. But why now, came the question. Why not the week of everybody was arguing about whether we were going to default on our debt? And people were saying, default
right.
on the debt.
Right.
Why now? Because the Treasury has come out with a higher borrowing estimate for this quarter. They had initially predicted they'd have to borrow only $733 billion, $750 billion. Now it's up that borrowing estimate to $1 trillion. And because with interest rates higher, it costs the Treasury more to borrow. Mm-hmm. And that means that our national debt is going to grow exponentially. As many have said, gosh, Ross Perot said it many years ago, that hockey puck analogy of at one point, the debt and the cost of paying for the interest on the debt would just spiral upwards. Well, the idea is that now suddenly maybe the markets are reflecting that that true cost of higher interest rates, not only in your borrowing on credit cards or on mortgage rates, but on the federal government, which is growing its deficits, borrowing more and paying more interest. So it has to borrow more. And there you go.
Do you think that the Fed is going to lower rates, not just slow the rate of increase to zero? But when are they going to subtract?
No, this is the critical moment where they don't have the flexibility to do that because they must keep fighting inflation. Because if there is inflation, interest rates will move higher of their own accord to offset fears of future inflation. So we maybe have just moved a little bit closer to the moment the Fed is in the hot seat, where even if it wanted to, it couldn't lower rates because inflation still lurks. And the government has to keep borrowing and at ever higher rates, which cause that merry-go-round of a higher deficit. So it's the market is down only 250 points today on the Dow. NASDAQ down nearly 2%. It's 300 points on the NASDAQ. It's a lower-priced index. Interest rates haven't changed much. The six-month, you could still get a 5.5% yield on treasuries. But all of a sudden, somebody jerked on the chain of the market and said, wait a minute, Fed may not be really in control here.
But I do think people take some consolation from the fact that to the degree that they're in equities in whatever their retirement portfolios are, people are feeling a little bit better about retirement right now.
Yeah, sure. That's why I started with the good news. The broad market is up 20% this year.
Yeah.
Does that make you want to think? So here's the question for everyone. We all started the year thinking about what's our asset allocation, big words for how much in stocks, anything in bonds, how much in money market funds or treasury bills. Now we've had the discipline to keep a portion in stocks. It's gone up. How would you feel now if the market went down because of this? Is this the time to take some profits? Or will any setback on this news be just a buying opportunity? That's for traders. For investors and potential retirees, you've now swelled your 401k plan account. Think about it.
Terry Savage is on the line. Terry, I got questions from our listeners. Are you ready?
Let's go. Yes.
Terry, how do I get a copy of my credit report? I fear something is showing that is not correct.
Annualcreditreport.com. That's annualcreditreport.com. The one way you can get a free credit report from each of the three bureaus. Start with one, and if you see something on that one, get a copy from their TransUnion, Experian, and Equifax. Usually they have all the same information. You have a right to dispute it, and the information's there. You do not have to sign up for protection services, or you do not have to pay for it. Annualcreditreport.com.
This is Mark. You're on WGN. We got a couple of you, and Mark, you're first. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, thank you so much. Hey, Terry, I really enjoy all your presentations and your information about the economy. You're fantastic. Thank you so much.
You bet.
Hey, I got a quick question about retirement annuities. I was proposed on my large IRA company that's saying, hey, Mark, you can go into a retirement annuity, and your break-even point is 14 years. Anything you know about those?
Mark, pardon me while I scream. I'm going to have to push
scream.
The mute button. That's the end of my scream. Mark.
Thank you.
There's a giant universe of financial people out there realizing that people like you and boomers are now retiring with a huge hunk of money in their 401k that they ought to do something with. And they're all willing to sell you a lot of stuff that is very costly and not helpful. You don't want to lock yourself into an immediate annuity, which just locks you into a fixed monthly payment that may be worthless over the 30 years you're retired. You don't want to get into one of those, in quote, investment annuities with a portion of the stock market. Just avoid those like the plague. You probably do want to do a rollover. Go to terrysavage.com and just put the word rollover in under the columns. I wrote a very explanatory column about that a few months back. And you want to, if you are going to roll out of your company plan, good idea. You don't want to be very aggressive now as you're retired. Go to a place like Fidelity or Vanguard. You don't need an advisor. Just diversify, some in stocks, some in bonds, some in conservative funds. Do not fall for that trap. I've been getting a lot of emails and posts and calls about that. So there must be a whole big group of salespeople out there offering you a free lunch that's going to give you indigestion for sure.
Good luck to you, Mark. Thank you for the phone call. Terry, I got a notification the other day from a company, and they said, we've renewed your subscription to this service. It was like $400. I thought, wait a minute, I don't want to automatically renew this service. I didn't even know I had this service, and it was charged, or I think it was charged to my credit card. I'm not sure. Maybe it's a scam and nothing happened. But my question is this. What's the window for me to call my credit card company and say, don't pay that or claw that back or recredit my account?
Well, you should call the very minute you notice anything amiss on your credit card. So you should be watching your credit card, not only on your monthly statement, but it's probably attached to your bank account. If you have Chase Visa, you just pull up your account every day and take a look at what the charges are. I know I do that.
But suppose that charge has been executed. Suppose they've said in that.
No. But they stand. They have a lot of power over the companies that they accept charges from. So even though it might have gone through in your eyes, you need to file a complaint immediately, file a fraud complaint, and they will temporarily credit it back to your account while they investigate. And they're pretty good about investigating and taking it off. That's credit card fraud. So report it immediately and always check your credit card, not just your balance, but your charges, your most recent charges on a daily or every other day basis.
Ken has a question for Terry Savage. Go ahead, Ken.
Yeah, hi, Terry. I was wondering about this. Post-COVID, my wife, who works for a corporation, works from home, I would say 95% of the time. And I'm a writer, so I work from home. She's putting a lot of the electricity, air conditioning, internet, things that when she used to have to go into the office, they don't have to pay for anymore. And I'm kind of used to claiming those expenses against my work. Can she do anything about that on her income tax? Because she doesn't really go into the office that much anymore, and we pay for all that stuff.
Gotcha. But there was some debate during COVID. As long as the company provides an office for you and you have the choice to work at home, her expenses theoretically are not deductible. But this is one I suggest you get a very good CPA to take a look, because you do have deductible expenses. It's limited to a portion of your home that's used exclusively for business. That might mean 20% of your electricity. Maybe it doesn't. So I want you to speak with a CPA about your situation. But it was during COVID, and I think it still is, that as long as your employer provides a workplace for you and you choose to work from home, then you don't get to deduct those expenses.
Okay,
think
well,
what you're
good
saving
for them.
On commuting costs, though.
Yeah, good for them.
Maybe their stock's going up, so that's okay.
But hold on, Ken. I want to make sure I'm clear about this. Ken, you're thinking about prorating the electrical cost of air conditioning to the office area where you guys are working from home, right? I mean, that's a very...
Yeah.
I get that, I guess, because if you were in the office, then you wouldn't be, the air conditioning would be up higher, right? And therefore, you wouldn't be cooling the 1,200 square feet where you're working, right? Is that what we're talking about?
And we're paying for cable and internet connectivity that she runs all her business through. If we have, it has to get faster speed modem and stuff.
What?
Have you ever been to a bullfight? You know what they do? They wave a red flag and the bull charges at them?
Yeah.
How big a flag do you want to wave at the IRS? Talk to your own tax consultant. Let them look at your situation, please.
Interesting point. If you wanted to get audited, that's one way to do it, Terry. John, could you please ask
That's
Terry
one of the best
question.
Ways.
My 16-year-old son has $1,000 he saved from his summer job. He's 16, $1,000. He insists that I open a 529 plan for him. Side note, mom and dad already setting aside money for college. I think we should just put it in a CD. What does Terry suggest the 16-year-old do with $1,000?
If you're going to apply for financial aid, any money held in the child's name or mom is custodian for little Billy weighs very heavily against you in the financial aid formula. If you already have a 529 plan open, sure, let him contribute to his education. He could open a Roth IRA if it was money that he paid taxes on, but if he was mowing lawns and collecting cash and saving the money, I think it's a great idea to let him be a participant in saving for his college.
I like the idea.
If you don't have a 529, brightstart.com, the Illinois 529 plan.
What's the site you go to where you sort of play the stock market, where you are buying micro shares?
Oh, you don't play the stock market, John.
Wait.
Watch this.
Okay.
You can go to stockpile.com and very low cost buy fractional shares.
Yep.
But again, once you start opening a brokerage account, a custodial account in the child's name, that impacts financial aid 7 times more heavily. So if there is a 529 account and the kid understands that, great. He'll have the pride of paying for part of his college. That's a good start.
I applied only for, what is Terry's opinion of annuities with long-term health care riders?
That's one way to fund long-term care insurance. Another way is to buy a combined life long-term care insurance. So the devil's in the details about long-term care. I'm going to give you a toll-free number. My expert is Brian Gordon at Gordon Associates. It's not a commercial. He's the guy I go to every time I have a question or write a column or a book.
Yep.
800-533-6242. Gordon Associates, or I think it's in Northbrook, 800-533-6242. So you will get an honest, straight answer about the best way to approach long-term care insurance. If you have an existing life insurance policy or an annuity, it may be possible to do a roll and use the cash that's built up inside that existing policy to fund long-term care combined with an annuity or life.
Out of time.
I know. Sorry, it's a short one today.
Terry, you're always very helpful, even in a short half segment like this. That is half of the show. We always appreciate your expertise. Remember, terrysavage.com. And remember, if you heard something here but you wanted to hear it again or play it for somebody else, we podcast these segments. Go to WGNradio.com. And on the Wintrust Business Lunch, you can play it back. Terry, we'll talk to you next Wednesday.
Absolutely.
We speak every week about the hybrid workforce, what it's like for employees, how to manage them. What's the best way to get performances out of them? How do you evaluate them? That's one of the things that Lucia Annunzio talks about, the acclaimed CEO strategist, author, and former adjunct professor at the University of Chicago's Booth School of Business. Lucia, it's John Williams. Thanks for joining us on WGN.
Hey, King John. As a lifelong Chicagoan, I'm thrilled to be on your show, I have to say. I've heard you for many years, and this is fun, but not as thrilled as my husband, who's a former Saluki.
Oh, no kidding. Bite him, dogs.
Yeah, and he said I had to say hi from him. He listens to your show all the time.
Well, I appreciate the support, and you've lent a lot of support to businesses in the C-suites, too, right?
What yes, do you say?
How has the business of managing people changed in the last 3 years?
Well, I mean, obviously, COVID was an unexpected crisis that had a simple solution in one way, that people stayed at home and people got used to staying at home. But post-COVID, according to the Tanner Report in 2003, 72% of employees crave social connection and community in the workplace. And when people really crave that community, the problem is they become very disengaged. Recent research shows that 68% of American workers are disengaged at work. And in the State of the Workforce report, globally, $7.8 trillion, 11% of the global GDP is being lost because of disengagement. So maybe it's easier to stay home, maybe it's cheaper. But it's not a one-size-fits-all.
I understand
that. How do we make that balance and not rush to the wrong answer based on cost or perception?
Well,
are we losing?
I wanted to insert this because you mentioned 68 and 72%, but it seems to me like numbers about that size of employees do like the hybrid work option.
Yeah, hybrid, but not totally remote. I don't think it's one or another. I think that one of the things we've been able to do remotely is have meetings and communicate. What we're not able to do really is have social connection. And when social connection is missing, it's very hard for knowledge to transfer. And that transfer of knowledge is what causes innovation. It's that hallway conversation. It's that, you know, going out to lunch and thinking a problem through. And you can do that on Zoom, but Zoom has never mastered, for example, eye contact. And it's very easy to get distracted on Zoom.
Huh.
I mean, how many people use Zoom to do their email and just show up at the call?
Yeah.
I mean, we're not really paying attention. And we're not paying attention to the fact that people aren't paying attention. Nobody's calling it out.
It's interesting, too, because on a Zoom meeting, it's an appointment. You get an email, then you click on the link, and then you're in the meeting. But there's nothing random about it. I'm not going to bump into somebody and over a cup of coffee start to talk about that thing we're working on a Zoom call because we didn't have an appointment for that meeting at the coffee machine. But in the office, you would. So what is the balance? Granted, one size doesn't fit all, but you're not against hybrid work per se, right? How do you then?
Oh, no, I'm not against it at all.
Yeah.
But I think that each individual manager and company has to look at what kind of work are they doing, what needs to happen in the office, what can be done at work, and what is the way to get not just the most productivity, but the best creativity out of your workforce. And engagement. I mean, many people today are stressed and anxious. One out of three managers are disengaged at work. I mean, you don't get the best work from disengaged people, and you don't make the most money from disengaged people. You just don't. People are bringing their bodies to the Zoom call, but not necessarily their heart and soul. And when you leave your brain out and you leave your heart out, you're not doing your best work. I don't care what anybody says.
Well, then, Lucia, what do you do? Do you, in fact, insist that people come in 2 days a week, 3 days a week? And do you try and engage them more when they come into the office? What's the recipe here?
Yeah, well, I think, as I said, there is no recipe, first of all. It's not one size fits all. But if you do bring people back to work, you have to understand that people need to be valued. My company, CFHP, did global research on the factors that accelerate profitable growth in uncertain times. And the number one thing that causes people to make money and drive innovation is people feel valued. They get to use their brain. We talked to over 600 people by phone, and what they said was they feel valued when they're told what to do, not how to do it, when their brain power is valued, where their boss wants to understand their thinking. And on a Zoom call, often what happens is just a checklist, the providing of information. What we have to do to engage people is engage their brains. And when they come to work, they can't just sit at a cubicle and be given tasks. How do we allow people of different thinking styles to exist? I mean, one of the things that happens in most meetings is a game I call Gotcha. Gotcha is a game where somebody gives an idea, and you're listening to that idea. You can even repeat it back. But what you're doing with the other half of your brain is looking for what's wrong with that idea. You want to prove how smart you are by showing how dumb the other person is. Well, the truly smart person wants to know what's smart about that dumb idea. Is it possible that that person's brain goes in a different direction than mine? And if it does, can we combine our brain power and get further together than we would alone? And for most people at work, they feel micromanaged. They're told what to do, how to do it, when to do it, why to do it. And when people are micromanaged, they're basically asked to leave their brain at the door.
I suppose that's a function of the remote relationship you have. I mean, since I don't see you, I don't see you working, there's nothing collaborative about the random meetings of the day, then I'm at least going to say, do this and do it this way. I must say, before you came on, I underlined a sentence that you wrote, and that is, tell people the goal, but not how to reach it. I think that's... I have not heard that put that way before. That's interesting.
Well, we call it treating smart people like they're smart. You know, if you tell me that I want to go to Philadelphia from Chicago, there are several different ways I can get there. But if I end up in Philadelphia on budget and on time, why do you care how I got there?
Lucia Annunzio is the CEO strategist, author, and former adjunct professor at the University of Chicago. More importantly, married to someone who went to Southern Illinois University at Carbondale.
Exactly. Yeah.
Lucia, you and I need to talk again, but this is timely advice. Let's connect again another day.
Thanks so much for having me on the show, John. I appreciate it.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. More business news with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. An economic study shows the annual Suenos Music Festival in Chicago generated nearly $181 million for the local economy. The study was done by a research group for C3 Presents, the festival's organizer. According to Cranes, it shows Suenos topping the NASCAR race by about $68 million. The Latin Music Festival back in May pulled in 450,000 attendees. Full study on the NASCAR impact isn't complete yet. The report says NASCAR took a larger toll on the city's infrastructure and will cost Chicago more than $3 million. The cost will include street repairs and police overtime. It's unclear how much of the cost NASCAR will cover. A new regional carrier is offering the first ever direct flight between Chicago and downstate Marion. Contour Airlines has launched new daily service from O'Hare Airport to Veterans Airport of Southern Illinois. The new route will make Southern Illinois more accessible for business travel and for people visiting family and friends. It also opens the door to tourist attractions in each region. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Here's the business of food with Steve Alexander.
Thank you. You know what time it is?
It's county fair time.
That's right, Big O, and that means...
deep-fried Twinkies.
And various other types of food you normally would not eat, but it's no holds barred at the county fair. The McHenry County Fair is in its second day, and we'll hear more about that and about a special moment this evening for Orion Samuelson. After I thank the Chevy Silverado HD for sponsoring us, experience your life in HD. Visit ChevyDriveChicago.com. Rich Tobias is on the phone. He's vice president of the McHenry County Fair Board, and the fair is on through Sunday in Woodstock. Food is always a highlight, and this being the 75th anniversary of the fair.
We've asked the vendors if they wanted to come up with some sort of a signature dish, and we'll be judging them, and the best ones will be awarded as the best 75th anniversary food at the fair.
You'll find all of the traditional things that make the county fair special, plus a few new things.
We're also adding in pro wrestling this year for the first time. The usual rodeo, demo derby, and tractor pulls.
And in the spotlight tonight at 5 o'clock is our Big O.
Orion lives here in McHenry County, and we're going to put his name on our main building at the fair and say thank you for all the things that he's done for farmers. And he and his family, Gloria and his family, will be out there.
Yeah, we will be there. Wouldn't miss it.
Yeah, that's the second building named after Orion. The Junior Livestock Building at the State Fairgrounds also bears his name, with Governor Jim Edgar doing the honors many years back.
After he named the building and the ceremony ended, he gave me the rest of the story. When he said, part of your responsibility for having a building named after you is that you will clean it every day during the Illinois State Fair. I said, no, I don't think I'll do that.
From the farm to your belly, today is National Ice Cream Sandwich Day. I know you can find those at the McHenry County Fair.
It's in Woodstock, Illinois. Parking is always free.
I'm Steve Alexander. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
Michael Jacobson is the president and CEO of the Illinois Hotel and Lodging Association. Michael, it seems like business has been good in the hotel business this year. Taylor Swift, Beyonce, NASCAR. What do you say about attendance in the hotels in town?
It's definitely been a strong summer, and really it's become, as you mentioned, the summer of special events as we continue to wait for some other key segments of our industry to recover, like business travel and international travel. Leisure travel, particularly around these major events, has really been what's been responsible for the growth that we've seen in the hotel industry in Chicago.
So do you compare pre to post-pandemic? I mean, where are we overall?
So things are definitely better than where we were a year ago, certainly 2 or 3 years ago. Just recently, in the last several weeks, you've seen Governor Pritzker and others talk about the fact that we had record hotel revenues over the past year, which is true, and it's definitely certainly a milestone in our industry's recovery from the pandemic, but we're still not back to normal. First of all, those numbers that were announced weren't adjusted for inflation. And of course, we know that revenues are based on the hotel rates, which are much higher right now because the cost of doing business across the board is much higher. So not only was it not adjusted for inflation, it doesn't necessarily tell the whole story that we aren't back to normal, particularly here in Chicago. We're still about 10 percentage points off from where we typically are in terms of hotel occupancy, the key metric we measure. So what that really tells you is that we're well on our way towards a full recovery, but we're not quite there. We still anticipate another 12 to 18 months before we reach our pre-pandemic levels.
What is the occupancy rate right now?
So in June, it was 80% in the city of Chicago, which actually was the third highest occupancy rate of any major market in the U.S. It was the second highest demand, the second highest amount of total rooms booked. We were only second to New York. So like I said, things are certainly doing better. It's just not quite where we typically are. And even when you look at the state as a whole, Illinois compared to others in our region and even the national average, the entire state in June fared about 3 to 5% better than the nationwide occupancy average.
But so you're waiting for international travelers and business travelers to populate these hotels. Taylor Swift can't come every year.
You know, she can't. We wish she would. But what does come every year is, of course, we're about to kick off Lollapalooza tomorrow. You just mentioned in one of your segments the impact of Sueños Music Festival. So you look at these major events, and that's really what's propped us up. But to your point, really what Chicago really relies on in terms of reaching a full recovery is that individual business travel. And what you're not seeing with return to office being delayed, and frankly, probably never, downtown's never going to look the way it was in terms of office space. The return to office metric always has a direct correlation with the business travel metric. So that's why you're starting to see not just downtown Chicago, but downtowns throughout the entire country think differently about what can fill that void if business travel never fully rebounds. And that's where we like seeing these major events just try to fill some of those empty hotel rooms that were lost because of the lack of business travel.
Right. I get it. You'll take it. But I think if you had your druthers, you'd rather have the consistency of business travel and international travel than having to rely on NASCAR, which did 83%, Beyonce did 95%, Taylor Swift did 97% hotel occupancy in Chicago. Ben Bradley at Channel 9 noted that Taylor Swift's show averaged $441 per night per room versus $269 per night per room for the Beyonce show. $441 a night per room. Wow. Wow.
Indeed. Indeed. If we could just continue replicating that again, especially bring those business travelers back, I think that's why it's so important that the hospitality industry is taken into account in the broader scope of economic development. You look at the work, the great work that World Business Chicago is doing to try to get more corporations to relocate to Chicago and keep those that are here still based in Chicago, because that's what's going to drive not just the individual business traveler, but also conventions. Conventions have come roaring back. We're at about 80 to 85% of normal attendance from out-of-town visitors for the typical convention down in McCormick Place. And that building single-handedly drives the success of the hotel industry. So we're hopeful that, and that's why about 12 to 18 months is when we expect a full recovery, because you're starting to see the metrics on the business travel side and the international travel side increase. It's just taking a little longer than I think some may have hoped.
One last thing. I got 45 seconds left, but the question is, are we ever going to get the business community to come back downtown the way they used to? In light of that question, what's your advice to the city leaders? Should we imagine the downtowns as leisure destinations or business destinations?
I think it's a mixed bag. It's a combination of them both. We need business travelers, not to sustain our hotels and business travel, but sustain our restaurants and the daytime business in the downtown area. But at the same time, knowing and realizing and understanding that it may never fully rebound, we do have to think differently about what experiential efforts could be done along the Mag Mile, in the Loop, just to think differently and outside of the box of what makes up that downtown culture. Because, again, it will never look like it did pre-pandemic. So we need to admit that and think of creative ideas to continue thinking differently, particularly on the residential side of what makes residents have that civic pride of living downtown.
Michael Jacobson is the president and CEO of the Illinois Hotel and Lodging Association. More at illinoishotels.org. Michael, thanks. Very interesting.
Thank you. Have a good one.